genetic damage thing. Ah, that thing. She sits up. What do you think about it? I say.
I don't know. I guess it makes me angry. She frowns.
No one likes to be told there's something wrong with them, especially something like their genes, which they can't change.
You think there's really something wrong with you?
I guess so. It's like a disease, right? They can see it in our genes. That's not really up for debate, is it?
I'm not saying your genes aren't different, I say. I'm just saying that doesn't mean one set is damaged and one set isn't. The genes for blue eyes and brown eyes are different too, but are blue eyes damaged? It's like they just arbitrarily decided that one kind of DNA was bad and the other was good.
Based on the evidence that GD behavior was worse, Christina points out.
Which could be caused by a lot of things, I retort.
I don't know why I'm arguing with you when I'd really like for you to be right, Christina says, laughing.
But don't you think a bunch of smart people like these bureau scientists could figure out the cause of bad behavior?
Sure, I say. But I think that no matter how smart, people usually see what they're already looking for. That's all.
Maybe you're biased, too, she says. Because you have friends and a boyfriend with this genetic issue.
Maybe.
I know I'm fumbling for an explanation, one I may not really believe, but I say it anyway.
I guess I don't see a reason to believe in genetic damage. Will it make me treat other people better?
No, the opposite, maybe.
And besides, I see what it's doing to Tobias, how it's making him doubt himself, and I don't understand how anything good can possibly come from it.
You don't believe things because they make your life better. You believe them because they're true, she points out.
But, I speak slowly as I mull that over. Isn't looking at the result of a belief a good way of evaluating if it's true?
Sounds like a stiff way of thinking. She pauses.
I guess my way is very candor, though. God, we really can't escape factions no matter where we go, can we?
I shrug.
Maybe it's not so important to escape them. Tobias walks into the dormitory, looking pale and exhausted, like he always does these days. His hair is pushed up on one side from lying on his pillow, and he's still wearing what he wore yesterday. He's been sleeping in his clothes since we came to the bureau.
Christina gets up.
Okay, I'm going to go. And leave you to
all this space. Alone. She gestures at all the empty beds, and then winks conspicuously at me as she walks out of the dormitory. Tobias smiles a little, but not enough to make me think he's actually happy. And instead of sitting next to me, he lingers at the foot of my bed, his fingers fumbling over the hem of his shirt.
There's something I want to talk to you about, he says.
Okay, I say, and I feel a spike of fear in my chest, like a jump on a heart monitor.
I want to ask you to promise not to get mad, he says.
But you know I don't make stupid promises, I say, my throat tight.
Right.
He does sit, then, in the curve of blankets left unmade on his bed. He avoids my eyes.
Nita left a note under my pillow, telling me to meet her last night. And I did.
I straighten. I can feel an angry heat spreading through me as I picture Nita's pretty face, Nita's graceful feet, walking toward my boyfriend.
A pretty girl asks you to meet her late at night, and you go? I demand.
And then you want me not to get mad about it?
It's not about that with Nita and me, at all, he says hastily, finally looking at me.
She just wanted to show me something. She doesn't believe in genetic damage, like she led me to believe. She has a plan to take away some of the Bureau's power, to make GDs more equal. We went to the fringe.
He tells me about the underground tunnel that leads outside, and the ramshackle town in the fringe, and the conversation with Raffi and Mary. He explains the war that the government kept hidden so that no one would know that genetically pure people
are capable of incredible violence, and the way GDs live in the metropolitan areas where the government still has real power. As he speaks, I feel suspicion toward Nita building inside me, but I don't know where it comes from. The gut instinct I usually trust, or my jealousy. When he finishes, he looks at me expectantly, and I purse my lips, trying to decide. "How do you know she's telling you the truth?" I say. "I don't," he says. "She promised to show me evidence. Tonight." He takes my hand. "I'd like you to come." "And Nita will be okay with that?" "I don't really care." His fingers slide between mine. "If she really needs my help, she'll have to figure out how to be okay with it." I look at our joined fingers, at the fraying cuff of his gray shirt and the worn knee of his jeans. I don't want to spend time with Nita and Tobias together, knowing that her supposed genetic damage gives her something in common with him that I will never have. But this is important to him, and I want to know if there's evidence of the Bureau's wrongdoing as much as he does. "Okay," I say. "I'll go. But don't for a second think that I actually believe she's not interested in you for more than your genetic code." "Well," he says, "don't for a second think I'm interested in anyone but you." He puts his hand on the back of my neck and draws my mouth toward his. The kiss and his words both comfort me, but my unease doesn't completely disappear.
Chapter 25. Tobias. Tris and I meet Nita in the hotel lobby after midnight, among the potted plants with their unfurling flowers, a tame wilderness. When Nita sees Tris at my side, her face tightens like she just tasted something bitter. "You promised you wouldn't tell her," she says, pointing at me. "What happened to protecting her?" "I changed my mind," I say. Tris laughs harshly. "That's what you told him? That he would be protecting me? That's a pretty skillful manipulation. Well done." I raise my eyebrows at her. I never thought of it as a manipulation, and that scares me a little. I can usually rely on myself to see a person's ulterior motives or to invent them in my mind, but I was so used to my desire to protect Tris, especially after almost losing her, that I didn't even think twice. Or I was so used to lying instead of telling difficult truths that I welcomed the chance to deceive her. "It wasn't a manipulation, it was the truth." Nita doesn't look angry anymore, just tired, her hand sliding over her face and then smoothing back her hair. She isn't defensive, which means that she might be telling the truth. "You could be arrested just for knowing what you know and not reporting it. I thought it would be better to avoid that." "Well, too late," I say. "Tris is coming. Is that a problem?" "I would rather have both of you than neither of you, and I'm sure that's the implied ultimatum," Nita says, rolling her eyes. "Let's go." Tris, Nita, and I walk back through the silent, still compound to the laboratories where Nita works. None of us speaks, and I'm conscious of every squeak of my shoes, every voice in the distance, every snap of every closing door. I feel like we're doing something forbidden, though technically we aren't. Not yet, anyway. Nita stops by the door to the laboratories and scans her card. We follow her past the gene therapy room where I saw a map of my genetic code, farther into the heart of the compound than I have been yet. It's dark and grim back here, and clumps of dust dance over the floor when we walk past. Nita pushes another door open with her shoulder, and we walk into a storage room. Dull metal drawers cover the walls, labeled with paper numbers, the ink worn off with time. In the center of the room is a lab table with a computer and a microscope, and a young man with slicked back blonde hair. "Tobias? Tris, this is my friend Reggie," Nita says. "He's also a GD." "Nice to meet you," Reggie says with a smile. He shakes Tris's hand, then mine, his grip firm. "Let's show them the slides first," Nita says. Reggie taps the computer screen and beckons us closer. "Not gonna bite." Tris and I exchange a glance, then stand behind Reggie at the table to see the screen. Pictures start flashing on it, one after another, They are in grayscale and look grainy and distorted. They must be very old. It takes me only a few seconds to realize that they are photographs of suffering. Narrow, pinched children with huge eyes. Ditches full of bodies. Huge mounds of burning papers. The photographs move so fast, like book pages fluttering in the breeze, that I only get impressions of horrors. Then I turn my face away, unable to look any longer. I feel a deep silence grow inside me. At first, when I look at Triss, her expression is like still water, like the images we just saw caused no ripples. But then her mouth quivers, and she presses her lips together to disguise it.
Look at these weapons.
Reggie brings up a photograph with a man in uniform holding a gun and points.
That kind of gun is incredibly old. The guns used in the Purity War were much more advanced. Even the Bureau would agree with that. It's got to be from a really old conflict which must have been waged by genetically pure people, since genetic manipulation didn't exist back then.
How do you hide a war? I say.
People are isolated. Starving.
Nita says quietly.
They know only what they're taught. They see only the information that's made available to them. And who controls all that? The government.
Okay. Triss's head bobs and she's talking too fast, nervous. So they're lying about our history. That doesn't mean they're the enemy. It just means they're a group of grossly misinformed people trying to better the world in an ill-advised way. Nita and Reggie glance at each other.
That's the thing, Nita says. They're hurting people.
She puts her hand on the counter and leans into it, leans toward us, and again I see the revolutionary building strength inside her, taking over the parts of her that are young woman and GD and laboratory worker.
When the abnegation wanted to reveal the great truth of their world sooner than they were supposed to, she says slowly, and Janine wanted to stifle them, the Bureau was all too happy to provide her with an incredibly advanced simulation serum. The attack simulation that enslaved the minds of the Dauntless, that resulted in the destruction of abnegation.
I take a moment to let that sink in.
That can't be true, I say. Janine told me that the highest proportion of divergent, the genetically pure, in any faction was in abnegation. You just said the Bureau values the genetically pure enough to send someone in to save them. Why would they help Janine kill them?
Janine was wrong, Triss says distantly. Evelyn said so. The highest proportion of divergent was among the factionless, not abnegation.
I turn to Nita. I still don't see why they would risk that many divergent, I say. I need evidence.
Why do you think we came here?
Nita switches on another set of lights that illuminate the drawers and paces along the left wall.
It took me a long time to get clearance to go in here, she says, even longer to acquire the knowledge to understand what I saw. I had help from one of the GPs, actually, a sympathizer.
Her hand hovers over one of the low drawers. From it, she takes a vial of orange liquid.
Look familiar?
She asks me. I try to remember the shot they gave me before the attack simulation began, right before the final round of Triss's initiation. Max did it, inserted the needle into the side of my neck as I had done myself dozens of times. Right before he did, the glass vial caught the light, and it was orange, just like whatever Nita is holding. The colors match, I say. So? Nita carries the vial to the microscope. Reggie takes a slide from a tray near the computer and, using a dropper, puts two drops of the orange liquid in its center, then seals the liquid in place with a second slide. As he places it on the microscope, his fingers are careful but certain. They are the movements of someone who has performed the same action hundreds of times. Reggie taps the computer screen a few times, opening a program called MicroScan.
This information is free and available to anyone who knows how to use this equipment and has the system password, which the GP sympathizer graciously gave me, Nita says. So in other words, it's not all that hard to access, but no one would think to examine it very closely. And GDs don't have system passwords, so it's not like we would have known about it. This storage room is for obsolete experiments, failures, or outdated developments, or useless things.
She looks through the microscope, using a knob on the side to focus the lens.
Go ahead,
she says. Reggie presses a button on the computer, and paragraphs of text appear under the microscan bar at the top of the screen. He points to a paragraph in the middle of the page, and I read it. Simulation serum V4.2 coordinates a large number of targets, transmits signals over long distances, hallucinogen from original formula not included. Simulated reality is predetermined by program master. That's it. That's the attack simulation serum.
Now why would the Bureau have this unless they had developed it? Nita says. They were the ones who put the serums into the experiments, but they usually left the serums alone, let the city residents develop them further. If Janine was the one who developed it, they wouldn't have stolen it from her. If it's here, it's because they made it.
I stare at the illuminated slide in the microscope, at the orange droplets swimming in the eyepiece, and release a shaky breath. Triss says, breathless,
why? Abnegation was about to reveal the truth to everyone inside the city, and you've seen what's happened now that the city knows the truth. Evelyn is effectively a dictator. The factionless are squashing the faction members, and I'm sure the factions will rise up against them sooner or later. Many people will die. Telling the truth risks the safety of the experiment, no question, Nita says. So a few months ago, when the Abnegation were on the verge of causing that destruction and instability by revealing Edith Pryor's video to your city, the Bureau probably thought better that the Abnegation should suffer a great loss, even at the expense of several divergent, than the whole city suffer a great loss. Better to end the lives of the Abnegation than to risk the experiment. So they reached out to someone who they knew would agree with them. Janine Matthews.
Her words surround me and bury themselves inside me. I set my hands on the lab table, letting it cool my palms, and look at my distorted reflection in the brushed metal. I may have hated my father for most of my life, but I never hated his faction. Abnegation's quiet. Their community, their routine, always seemed good to me. And now most of those kind, giving people are dead. Murdered at the hands of the Dauntless, at the urging of Janine, with the power of the Bureau to back her. Triss's mother and father were among them. Triss stands so still, her hands dangling limply, turning red with the flush of her blood.
This is the problem with their blind commitment to these experiments, Nita says next to us, as if sliding the words into the empty spaces of our minds. The Bureau values the experiments above GD lives. It's obvious. And now things could get even worse.
Worse? I say. Worse than killing most of the Abnegation? How?
The government has been threatening to shut down the experiments for almost a year now, Nita says. The experiments keep falling apart because the communities can't live in peace, and David keeps finding ways to restore peace just in the nick of time. And if anything else goes wrong in Chicago, he can do it again. He can reset all the experiments at any time.
Reset them, I say. With the Abnegation memory serum, Reggie says. Well, really, it's the Bureau's memory serum. Every man, woman, and child will have to begin again.
Nita says tersely. Their entire lives erased against their will for the sake of solving a genetic damage problem that doesn't actually exist. These people have the power to do that, and no one should have that power.
I remember the thought I had after Johanna told me about the Amity administering the memory serum to Dauntless patrols, that when you take a person's memories, you change who they are. Suddenly, I don't care what Nita's plan is, as long as it means striking the Bureau as hard as we can. What I have learned in the past few days has made me feel like there is nothing about this place worth salvaging.
What's the plan?
Says Triss, her voice flat, almost mechanical.
I'll let my friends from the Fringe in through the underground tunnel, Nita says. Tobias, you will shut off the security system as I do, so that we aren't caught. It's nearly the same technology you worked with in the Dauntless control room. It should be easy for you.
Then Raffi, Mary and I will break into the weapons lab and steal the memory serum so the Bureau can't use it. Reggie's been helping behind the scenes, but he'll be opening the tunnel for us on the day of the attack.
What will you do with a bunch of memory serum? I say.
Destroy it, Nita says, even-keeled.
I feel strange. Empty, like a deflated balloon. I don't know what I had in mind when Nita talked about her plan, but it wasn't this. This feels so small. So passive as an act of retaliation against the people responsible for the attack simulation. The people who told me that there was something wrong with me at my very core, in my genetic code.
That's all you intend to do? Triss says, finally looking away from the microscope.
She narrows her eyes at Nita.
You know that the Bureau is responsible for the murders of hundreds of people, and your plan is to take away their memory serum? I don't remember inviting your critique of my plan. I'm not critiquing your plan, Triss says. I'm telling you I don't believe you. You hate these people. I can tell by the way you talk about them. Whatever you intend to do, I think it's far worse than stealing some serum. The memory serum is what they use to keep the experiments running. It's their greatest source of power over your city, and I want to take it away. I'd say that's a hard enough blow for now.
Nita sounds gentle, like she's explaining something to a child.
I never said this was all I was ever going to do. It's not always wise to strike as hard as you can at the first opportunity. This is a long race, not a sprint.
Triss just shakes her head.
Tobias, are you in?
Nita says. I look from Triss with her tense, stiff posture to Nita, who is relaxed, ready. I don't see whatever Triss sees or hear it. And when I think about saying no, I feel like my body will collapse in on itself. I have to do something. Even if it's small, I have to do something, and I don't understand why Triss doesn't feel the same desperation inside her. Yes, I say. Triss turns to me, her eyes wide, incredulous. I ignore her. I can disable the security system. I'll need some Amity Peace Serum. Do you have access to that?
I do. Nita smiles a little. I'll send you a message with the timing. Come on, Reggie. Let's leave these two to talk.
Reggie nods to me and then to Triss, and then he and Nita both leave the room, easing the door closed behind them so it doesn't make a sound. Triss turns to me, her arms folded like two bars across her body, keeping me out.
I can't believe you, she said. She's lying. Why can't you see that?
Because it's not there, I say. I can tell when someone's lying just as well as you can, and in this situation, I think your judgment might be clouded by something else. Something like jealousy.
I am not jealous, she says, scowling at me. I am being smart. She has something bigger planned, and if I were you, I would run far away from anyone who lies to me about what they want me to participate in.
Well, you're not me. I shake my head. God, Triss, these people murdered your parents and you're not going to do something about it?
I never said I wasn't going to do anything, she says tersely. But I don't have to buy into the first plan I hear either.
You know, I brought you here because I wanted to be honest with you, not so that you could make snap judgments about people and tell me what to do.
Remember what happened last time you didn't trust my snap judgments? Triss says coldly. You found out that I was right. I was right about Edith Pryor's video changing everything. And I was right about Evelyn. And I'm right about this.
Yeah, you're always right, I say. Were you right about running into dangerous situations without weapons? Were you right about lying to me and going on a death march to Erudite headquarters in the middle of the night? Or about Peter? Were you right about him?
Don't throw those things in my face.
She points at me. And I feel like I'm a child getting lectured by a parent.
I never said I was perfect, but you can't even see past your own desperation. You went along with Evelyn because you were desperate for a parent, and now you're going along with this because you're desperate not to be damaged.
The word shivers through me. I am not damaged, I say quietly. I can't believe you have so little faith in me that you would tell me not to trust myself. I shake my head. And I don't need your permission. I start toward the door,
and as my hand closes around the handle, she says,
"Just leaving so that you can have the last word. That's really mature."
"So is being suspicious of someone's motives just because she's pretty," I say. "I guess we're even." I leave the room. I am not a desperate, unsteady child who throws his trust around. I am not damaged.
Chapter 26. Triss. I touch my forehead to the eyepiece of the microscope. The serum swims before me, orange-brown. I was so busy looking for Nita's lies that I barely registered the truth. In order to get their hands on this serum, the Bureau must have developed it and somehow delivered it to Janine to use. I pull away. Why would Janine work with the Bureau when she so badly wanted to stay in the city, away from them? But I guess the Bureau and Janine shared a common goal. Both wanted the experiment to continue. Both were terrified of what would happen if it didn't. Both were willing to sacrifice innocent lives to do it. I thought this place could be home. But the Bureau is full of killers. I rock back on my heels as if pushed back by some invisible force, then walk out of the room, my heart beating fast. I ignore the few people dawdling in the corridor in front of me. I just push farther into the Bureau compound, farther and farther into the belly of the beast. Maybe this place could be home, I hear myself saying to Christina. These people murdered your parents. Tobias's words echo in my head. I don't know where I'm going except that I need space and air. I clutch my ID in my hand and half walk, half run past the security barrier to the sculpture. There is no light shining into the tank now, though the water still falls from it. One drop for every second that passes. I stand for a little while, watching it. And then, across the slab of stone, I see my brother. "Are you all right?" he says tentatively. I am not all right. I was beginning to feel that I had finally found a place to stay, a place that was not so unstable or corrupt or controlling that I could actually belong there. You would think that I would have learned by now. Such a place does not exist. "No," I say. He starts to move around the stone block, toward me. "What is it?" "What is it?" I laugh. "Let me put it this way. I just found out you're not the worst person I know." I drop into a crouch and push my fingers through my hair. I feel numb and terrified of my own numbness. The Bureau is responsible for my parents' deaths. Why do I have to keep repeating it to myself to believe it? What's wrong with me? "Oh," he says, "I'm sorry." All I can manage is a small grunt. "You know what Mom told me once?" he says, and the way he says Mom, like he didn't betray her, sets my teeth on edge. "She said that everyone has some evil inside them, and the first step to loving anyone is to recognize the same evil in ourselves, so we're able to forgive them." "Is that what you want me to do?" I say dully as I stand. "I may have done bad things, Caleb, but I would never deliver you to your own execution." "You can't say that," he says, and it sounds like he's pleading with me, begging me to say that I am just like him, no better. "You didn't know how persuasive Janine was." Something inside me snaps, like a brittle rubber band. I punch him in the face. All I can think about is how the erudite stripped me of my watch and my shoes and led me to the bare table where they would take my life. A table that Caleb may as well have set up himself. I thought I was beyond this kind of anger, but as he stumbles back with his hands on his face, I pursue him, grabbing the front of his shirt and slamming him against the stone sculpture and screaming that he is a coward and a traitor and that I will kill him. I will kill him. One of the guards comes toward me, and all she has to do is put her hand on my arm, and the spell is broken. I release Caleb's shirt. I shake out my stinging hand. I turn and walk away. There's a beige sweater draped over the empty chair in Matthew's lab, the sleeve brushing the floor. I've never met his supervisor,
I'm beginning to suspect that Matthew does all the real work. I sit on top of the sweater and examine my knuckles. A few of them are split from punching Caleb and dotted with faint bruises. It seems fitting that the blow would leave a mark on both of us. That's how the world works. Last night, when I went back to the dormitory, Tobias wasn't there, and I was too angry to sleep. In the hours that I lay awake, staring at the ceiling, I decided that while I wasn't going to participate in Nita's plan, I also wasn't going to stop it. The truth about the attack simulation brewed hate for the Bureau inside me, and I want to watch it break apart from within. Matthew is talking science. I'm having trouble paying attention. Doing some genetic analysis, which is fine, but before we were developing a way to make the memory compound behave as a virus, he says, with the same rapid replication, the same ability to spread through the air. And then we developed a vaccination for it. Just a temporary one. Only lasts for 48 hours, but still. I nod. So, you were making it so you could set up other city experiments more efficiently, right? I say. No need to inject everyone with a memory serum, when you can just release it and let it spread. Exactly. He seems excited that I'm actually interested in what he's saying. And it's a better model for having the option to select particular members of a population to opt out. You inoculate them. The virus spreads within 24 hours, and it has no effect on them. I nod again. You okay? Matthew says, his coffee mug poised near his mouth. He puts it down. I heard the security guards had to pull you off someone last night. It was my brother, Caleb. Ah, Matthew raises an eyebrow. What did he do this time? Nothing, really. I pinch the sweater sleeve between my fingers. Its edges are all fraying, wearing with time. I was wired to explode anyway. He just got in the way. I already know, by looking at him, the question he's asking, and I want to explain it all to him, everything that Nita showed me and told me. I wonder if I can trust him. I heard something yesterday, I say, testing the waters. About the Bureau. About my city and the simulations. He straightens up and gives me a strange look. What? I say. Did you hear that something from Nita? He says. Yes. How did you know that? I've helped her a couple times, he says. I let her into that storage room. Did she tell you anything else? Matthew is Nita's informant? I stare at him. I never thought that Matthew, who went out of his way to show me the difference between my pure genes and Tobias's damaged genes, might be helping Nita. Something about a plan? I say slowly. He gets up and walks toward me, oddly tense. I lean away from him by instinct. Is it happening? He says. Do you know when? What's going on? I say. Why would you help Nita? Because all this genetic damage nonsense is ridiculous, he says. It's very important that you answer my questions. It is happening, and I don't know when, but I think it will be soon. Shit. Matthew puts his hands on his face. Nothing good can come of this. If you don't stop saying cryptic things, I'm going to slap you, I say, getting to my feet. I was helping Nita until she told me what she and those fringe people wanted to do. Matthew says. They want to get to the weapons lab and steal the memory serum. Yeah, I heard. No. He shakes his head. No, they don't want the memory serum. They want the death serum. Similar to the one the erudite have. The one you were supposed to be injected with when you were almost executed. They're going to use it for assassinations. A lot of them. Set off an aerosol can and it's easy, see? Give it to the right people, and you have an explosion of anarchy and violence, which is exactly what those fringe people want. I do see. I see the tilt of a vial, the quick press of a button on an aerosol can. I see abnegation bodies and erudite bodies sprawled over streets and staircases. I see the little pieces of this world that we've managed to cling to, bursting into flames. I thought I was helping her with something smarter, Matthew says. If I'd known I was helping her start another war, I wouldn't have done it. We have to do something about this. I told him, I say softly, but not to Matthew, to myself. I told him she was lying. We may have a problem with the way we treat GDs in this country, but it's not going to be solved by killing a bunch of people, he says. Now come on, we're going to David's office. I don't know what's right or wrong. I don't know anything about this country, or the way it works, or what it needs to change. But I do know that a bunch of death serum in the hands of Nita and some people from the fringe is no better than a bunch of death serum in the weapons lab of the Bureau. So I chase Matthew down the hallway outside. We walk quickly in the direction of the front entrance, where I first entered this compound. When we walk past the security checkpoint, I spot Uriah near the sculpture. He lifts a hand to wave to me, his mouth pressed into a line that could be a smile if he was trying harder. Above his head, light refracts through the water tank, the symbol of the compound's slow, pointless struggle. I'm just passing the security checkpoint when I see the wall next to Uriah explode. It is like fire blossoming from a bud. Shards of glass and metal spray from the center of the bloom, and Uriah's body is among them, a limp projectile. A deep rumble moves through me like a shudder. My mouth is open. I am screaming his name, but I can't hear myself over the ringing in my ears. Around me, everyone is crouched, their arms curled around their heads. But I am on my feet, watching the hole in the compound wall. No one comes through it. Seconds later, everyone around me starts running away from the blast, and I hurl myself against them, shoulder first, toward Uriah. An elbow hits me in the side, and I fall down, my face scraping something hard and metal, the side of a table. I struggle to my feet, wiping blood from my eyebrow with a sleeve. Fabric slides over my arms and limbs, hair, and wide eyes are all I can see, except the sign over their heads that says, "Compound Exit." "Signal the alarms!" one of the guards at the security checkpoint screams. I duck under an arm and trip to the side. "I did!" another guard shouts. "They aren't working!" Matthew grabs my shoulder and yells into my ear. "What are you doing? Don't go toward..." I move faster, finding an empty channel where there are no people to obstruct my path. Matthew runs after me. "We shouldn't be going to the explosion site! Whoever set it off is already in the building," he says. "Weapons lab, now! Come on!" The weapons lab. Holy words. I think of Uriah, lying on the tile surrounded by glass and metal. My body is straining toward him, every muscle. But I know there's nothing I can do for him right now. The more important thing for me to do is to use my knowledge of chaos, of attacks, to keep Nita and her friends from stealing the death serum. Matthew was right. Nothing good can come of this. Matthew takes the lead, plunging into the crowd like it is a pool of water. I try to look only at the back of his head, to keep track of him, but the oncoming faces distract me, the mouths and eyes rigid with terror. I lose him for a few seconds, and then find him again, several yards ahead, turning right at the next hallway. "Matthew!" I shout, and I push my way through another group of people. Finally, I catch up, grabbing the back of his shirt. He turns and grabs my hand. "Are you okay?" he says, staring just above my eyebrow. In the rush, I almost forgot about my cut. I press my sleeve to it, and it comes away red, but I nod. "I'm fine. Let's go." We sprint side by side down the hallway. This one is not as crowded as the others, but I can see that whoever infiltrated the building has been here already. There are guards lying on the floor, some alive and some not. I see a gun on the tile near a drinking fountain and lurch toward it, breaking my grip on Matthew's hand. I grab the gun and offer it to Matthew. He shakes his head. "I've never fired one." "Oh, for God's sake." My finger curls around the trigger. It's different from the guns we had in the city. It doesn't have a barrel that shifts to the side, or the same tension in the trigger, or even the same distribution of weight. It's easier to hold as a result, because it doesn't spark the same memories. Matthew is gasping for air. So am I, only I don't notice it the same way, because I've done this sprint through chaos so many times. The next hallway he guides us to is empty, except for one fallen soldier. She's not moving. "It's not far," he says, and I touch my finger to my lips to tell him to be quiet. We slow to a walk, and I squeeze the gun, my sweat making it slip. I don't know how many bullets are in it, or how to check. When we pass the soldier, I pause to search her for a weapon. I find a gun tucked under her hip, where she fell on her own wrist. Matthew stares at her, unblinking, as I take her weapon. "Hey," I say quietly, "just keep moving. Move now, process later." I elbow him and lead the way down the hallway. Here the hallways are dim, the ceilings crossed with bars and pipes. I can hear people ahead and don't need Matthew's whispered directions to find them. When we reach the place where we're supposed to turn, I press against the wall and look around the corner, careful to keep myself as hidden as possible. There's a set of double-walled glass doors that look as heavy as metal doors would be, but they're open. Beyond them is a cramped hallway, empty except for three people in black. They wear heavy clothing and carry guns so big I'm not sure I would be able to lift one. Their faces are covered with dark fabric, disguising all but their eyes. On his knees, before the double doors, is David, a gun barrel pressed to his temple, blood trailing down his chin, and standing among the invaders, wearing the same mask as the others, is a girl with a dark ponytail. Nita. Chapter 27. Tris.
"Get us in, David,"
Nita says, her voice garbled by the mask. David's eyes slide lazily to the side, to the man pointing the gun at him.
"I don't believe you'll shoot me," he says, "because I'm the only one in this building who knows this information, and you want that serum."
"Won't shoot you in the head, maybe," the man says, "but there are other places."
The man and Nita exchange a look, then the man shifts the gun down, to David's feet, and fires. I squeeze my eyes shut as David's screams fill the hallway. He might be one of the people who offered Janine Matthews the attack simulation, but I still don't relish his screams of pain. I stare at the guns I carry, one in each hand, my fingers pale against the black triggers. I imagine myself trimming back all the stray branches of my thoughts, focusing on just this place, just this time. I put my mouth right next to Matthew's ear and mutter, "Go for help, now." Matthew nods and starts down the hallway. To his credit, he moves quietly, his footsteps silent on the tile. At the end of the hallway, he looks back at me and then disappears around the bend.
"I'm sick of this shit," the red-haired woman says. "Just blow up the doors."
"An explosion would activate one of the backup security measures," says Nita. "We need the passcode."
I look around the corner again, and this time, David's eyes shift to mine. His face is pale and shiny with sweat, and there is a wide pool of blood around his ankles. The others are looking at Nita, who takes a black box from her pocket and opens it to reveal a syringe and needle.
"Thought you said that stuff doesn't work on him," the man with the gun says.
"I said he could resist it, not that it didn't work at all," she says. "David, this is a very potent blend of truth serum and fear serum. I'm going to stick you with it if you don't tell us the passcode."
"I know this is just the fault of your genes, Nita," David says weakly. "If you stop now, I can help you. I can..."
Nita smiles a twisted smile. With relish, she sticks the needle in his neck and presses the plunger. David slumps over, and then his body shudders, and shudders again. He opens his eyes wide and screams, staring at the empty air. And I know what he's seeing, because I've seen it myself, in Erudite headquarters, under the influence of the terror serum. I watched my worst fears come to life.
Nita kneels in front of him and grabs his face.
David,
she says urgently.
I can make it stop if you tell us how to get into this room. Hear me?
He pants, and his eyes aren't focused on her, but rather on something over her shoulder.
Don't do it!
He shouts, and he lunges forward, toward whatever phantom the serum is showing him. Nita puts an arm across his chest to keep him steady, and he screams,
Don't!
Nita shakes him.
I'll stop them from doing it if you tell me how to get in.
Her, David says, and tears gleam in his eyes.
The name. Whose name? We're running out of time,
the man with the gun trained on David says.
Either we get the serum or we kill him.
Her, David says, pointing at the space in front of him. Pointing at me. I stretch my arms around the corner of the wall and fire twice. The first bullet hits the wall. The second hits the man in the arm, so the huge weapon topples to the floor. The red-haired woman points her weapon at me, or the part of me that she can see, half hidden by the wall. Anita screams,
Hold your fire!
Triss, Nita says,
You don't know what you're doing.
You're probably right, I say, and I fire again. This time my hand is steadier, my aim is better. I hit Nita's side, right above her hip. She screams into her mask and clutches the hole in her skin, sinking to her knees, her hands covered in blood. David surges toward me with a grimace of pain as he puts weight on his injured leg. I wrap my arm around his waist and swing his body around so he's between me and the remaining soldiers. Then I press one of my guns to the back of his head. They all freeze. I can feel my heartbeat in my throat. In my hands, behind my eyes. Fire, and I'll shoot him in the head, I say.
You wouldn't kill your own leader,
the red-haired woman says. He's not my leader. I don't care if he lives or dies, I say. But if you think I'm going to let you gain control of that death serum, you're insane. I start to shuffle backward, with David whimpering in front of me, still under the influence of the serum cocktail. I duck my head and turn my body sideways so it's safely behind his. I keep one of the guns against his head. We reach the end of the hallway, and the woman calls my bluff. She fires and hits David just above the knee in his other leg. He collapses with a scream, and I'm exposed. I dive to the ground, slamming my elbows into the floor as a bullet goes past me, the sound vibrating inside my head. Then I feel something hot spreading through my left arm, and I see blood and my feet scramble on the floor, searching for traction. I find it and fire blindly down the hallway. I grab David by the collar and drag him around the corner, pain searing through my left arm. I hear running footsteps and groan, but they aren't coming from behind me. They're coming from in front. People surround me, Matthew among them. And some of them pick David up and run with him down the hallway. Matthew offers me his hand. My ears are ringing. I can't believe I did it. Chapter 28. Triss. The hospital is packed with people, all of them yelling or racing back and forth or yanking curtains shut. Before I sat down, I checked all the beds for Tobias. He wasn't in any of them. I'm still shaking with relief. Uriah is not here either. He is in one of the other rooms, and the door is closed. Not a good sign. The nurse who dabs my arm with antiseptic is breathless and looks around at all the activity instead of at my wound. I'm told it's a minor graze. Nothing to worry about. I can wait if you need to do something else, I say. I have to find someone anyway. She purses her lips and says, You need stitches.
It's just a graze.
Not your arm, your head, she says, pointing to a spot above my eye. I had almost forgotten about the cut and all the chaos, but it still hasn't stopped bleeding. Fine. I'm going to have to give you a shot of this numbing agent, she says, holding up a syringe. I am so used to needles that I don't even react. She dabs my forehead with antiseptic. They are so careful about germs here, and I feel the sting and prickle of the needle diminishing by the second as the numbing agent does its work. I watch the people rush past as she stitches my skin. A doctor pulls off a pair of blood-stained rubber gloves. A nurse carries a tray of gauze, his shoes nearly slipping on the tile. A family member of someone injured wrings her hands. The air smells like chemicals and old paper and warm bodies. "Any updates on David?" I say. "He'll live, but it will take him a long time to walk again," she says. Her lips stop puckering, just for a few seconds. "Could have been a lot worse, if you hadn't been there. You're all set." I nod. I wish I could tell her that I'm not a hero, that I was using him as a shield, like a wall of meat. I wish I could confess to being a person full of hate for the Bureau and for David, a person who would let someone else get riddled with bullets to save herself. My parents would be ashamed. She places a bandage over the stitches to protect the wound and gathers all the wrappers and soaked cotton balls into her fists to throw them away. Before I can thank her, she is gone, off to the next bed, the next patient, the next injury. Injured people line the hallway outside the emergency ward. I have gathered from the evidence that there was another explosion set off at the same time as the one near the entrance. Both were diversions. Our attackers got in through the underground tunnel, as Nita said they would. She never mentioned blowing holes in walls. The doors at the end of the hallway open, and a few people rush in, carrying a young woman, Nita, between them. They put her on a cot near one of the walls. She groans, clutching at a roll of gauze that is pressed to the wound in her side. I feel strangely separate from her pain. I shot her. I had to. That's the end of it. As I walk down the aisle between the wounded, I notice the uniforms. Everyone sitting here wears green. With few exceptions, they are all support staff. They are clutching bleeding arms or legs or heads. Their injuries no better than my own. Some much worse. I catch my reflection in the windows just beyond the main corridor. My hair is stringy and limp, and the bandage dominates my forehead. David's blood and my blood smear my clothes in places. I need to shower and change. But first, I have to find Tobias and Christina. I haven't seen either of them since before the invasion. It doesn't take me long to find Christina. She is sitting in the waiting room when I walk out of the emergency ward, her knee jiggling so much that the person next to her is giving her dirty looks. She lifts a hand to greet me, but her eyes shift away from mine and toward the doors right afterward. "You all right?" she asks me. "Yeah," I say. "There's still no update on Uriah. I couldn't get into the room." "These people make me crazy, you know that?" she says. "They won't tell anyone anything. They won't let us see him. It's like they think they own him and everything that happens to him." "They work differently here. I'm sure they'll tell you when they know something concrete." "Well, they would tell you," she says, scowling. "But I'm not convinced they would give me a second look." A few days ago, I might have disagreed with her, unsure how influential their belief in genetic damage was on their behavior. I'm not sure what to do, not sure how to talk to her now that I have these advantages and she does not, and there's nothing either of us can do about it. All I can think to do is be near her. "I have to find Tobias, but I'll come back after I do and sit with you, okay?" She finally looks at me, and her knee goes still. "They didn't tell you?" My stomach clenches with fear. "Tell me what?" "Tobias was arrested," she says quietly. "I saw him sitting with the invaders right before I came in here. Some people saw him at the control room before the attack. They say he was disabling the alarm system." There is a sad look in her eyes, like she pities me. But I already knew what Tobias did. "Where are they?" I say. I need to talk to him, and I know what I need to say.
Chapter 29. Tobias. My wrists sting from the plastic tie the guard squeezed around them. I probe my jaw with just my fingertips, testing the skin for blood. All right, Reggie says. I nod. I have dealt with worse injuries than this. I have been hit harder than I was by the soldier who slammed the butt of his gun into my jaw while he was arresting me. His eyes were wild with anger when he did it. Mary and Raffi sit a few feet away, Raffi clutching a handful of gauze to his bleeding arm. A guard stands between us and them, keeping us separate. As I look at them, Raffi meets my eyes and nods, as if to say, "Well done." If I did well, why do I feel sick to my stomach? "Listen," Reggie says, shifting so he's closer to me. "Nita and the Fringe people are taking the fall. It'll be all right." I nod again without conviction. We had a backup plan for our probable arrest, and I'm not worried about its success. What I am worried about is how long it's taking them to deal with us, and how casual it has been. We have been sitting against a wall in an empty corridor since they caught the invaders more than an hour ago, and no one has come to tell us what will happen to us, or to ask us any questions. I haven't even seen Nita yet. It puts a sour taste in my mouth. Whatever we did, it seems to have shaken them up. And I know of nothing that shakes people up as much as lost lives. How many of those am I responsible for? Because I participated in this. Nita told me they were going to steal memory serum, I say to Reggie, and I'm afraid to look at him. Was that true? Reggie eyes the guard who stands a few feet away. We have already been yelled at once for talking. But I know the answer. It wasn't, was it? I say. Triss was right. Nita was lying. Hey! The guard marches toward us and sticks the barrel of her gun between us. Move aside. No conversation allowed. Reggie shifts to the right and I make eye contact with the guard. What's going on? I say. What happened? Oh, like you don't know, she answers. Now keep your mouth shut. I watch her walk away, and then I see a small blonde girl appear at the edge of the hallway. Triss. A bandage stretches across her forehead, and blood smears her clothes in the shape of fingers. She clutches a piece of paper in her fist. Hey, the guard says. What are you doing here? Shelley, the other guard says, jogging over. Calm down. That's the girl who saved David. The girl who saved David from what, exactly? Oh. Shelley puts her gun down. Well, it's still a valid question. They asked me to bring you guys an update, Triss says, and she offers Shelley the piece of paper. David is in recovery. He'll live, but they're not sure when he'll walk again. Most of the other injured have been cared for. The sour taste in my mouth grows stronger. David can't walk. What they've been doing all this time is caring for the injured. All this destruction, and for what? I don't even know. I don't know the truth. What did I do? Do they have a casualty count? Shelley asks. Not yet, Triss replies. Thanks for letting us know. Listen, she shifts her weight to one foot. I need to talk to him. She jerks her head toward me. We can't really, Shelley starts. Just for a second, I promise, Triss says. Please. Let her, the other guard says. What could it hurt? Fine, Shelley says. I'll give you 2 minutes. She nods to me, and I use the wall to push myself to my feet, my hands still bound in front of me. Triss comes closer, but not that close. The space and her folded arms form a barrier between us that may as well be a wall. She looks somewhere south of my eyes. Triss, I want to know what your friends did? She says. Her voice shakes, and I do not make the mistake of thinking it's from tears. It's from anger. They weren't after the memory serum. They were after poison.
death serum so that they could kill a bunch of important government people and start a war.